Well, first of all, thank you, Guy, for the introduction, and thank you, Brian, for inviting us here. It's an absolute pleasure to be here among all of you, and actually it's been a pleasure for weeks, because whenever a colleague or even a remote relative said anything about making a meeting up for a beer or anything, I had the opportunity to say, well, March is not that good, I'm giving a lecture in Oxford, so you know, just... But I can't say that anymore, but on a more serious note, Anita and I have been to these conferences before, and we are always delighted when we return home. We get inspired because we're here with you, and we always go back having this feeling that we're not alone in this sometimes lonely and shady business of speech writing. You're not alone when you return from these conferences. Therefore, it's also quite nerve-breaking to stand here in front of you, but we'll try to manage.
Yeah, Brian has given a short introduction, so just to repeat, Kasper and I, we work closely together as speech writers in the Danish Prime Minister's office for 5 years, and I can really recommend being 2 speech writers. That's a luxury, I know. But we organize the writing, so one of us always had the lead in a specific speech and the other one supported. And our colleagues and our boss saw us as one unit, the speech writers. And we both knew that we wrote better speeches together than on our own. And preparing our presentation for today, working together again, that was kind of the standard. Our presentation has 3 parts. First, a short introduction to the Prime Minister's office in Denmark. And second, our key learnings from writing speeches during the pandemic. And third, we will end up answering, is it possible to save the country with speech? So hang on.
Yeah, I'll start out by telling you a little about what the Prime Minister's office is like. I will keep it brief because most of you probably know it already, if you can see the picture. On the right, the Prime Minister, of course, and on the left, Kasper. Remember that name? Her most valuable staff member? No, not really. That was, of course, a picture from Borgen. This is a picture from the real Prime Minister's office during the COVID-19 crisis. And in contrast to Borgen, the real Prime Minister's office mostly consists of civil servants. And Anita and I were civil servants as well, writing speeches for the Prime Minister in charge in a true democratic way. And in fact, we think that this thing about finding a new voice, finding a new way of thinking and writing for new persons is one of the most exciting tasks about being a speechwriter. The Prime Minister's office in Denmark is quite small, actually. It's about 100 employees, most of them civil servants. It's placed on 2 floors only in Christiansborg's castle in the royal wing there, so it's quite a small place. I was in England and in London last autumn visiting the communications department in Whitehall. I think they were about 200 people or so. It was quite large. In Denmark, there are 7 people in this communication department of the Prime Minister. They're running websites, handling press and everything. And of course, the speech writing is also placed there. This means that in Denmark we have a quite small and agile Prime Minister's office. It's very efficient and it has great attention to speeches. So that is a privilege working there. Yeah, that was just to give you a short impression of the frames we were working on. Now to the pandemic, because this is what it's all about, our presentation, the COVID-19 pandemic. And for you to understand the next parts of our presentation, it's important for you to know that Denmark actually managed the COVID-19 quite well in the beginnings. Anyway, we had quite few infected. We had quite few casualties, so to speak, for a long time. And we have one of the lowest COVID death rates in Scandinavia. We also had quite popular prime minister and government at the beginning. And this is also important to remember as we move on to talk about the prime minister's speeches.
Yes, during the pandemic, our prime minister, Mette Frederiksen, held more than 25 press briefings. And with her, she had relevant ministers, agents, directors, and the national police chief. Typically, the press briefings were announced in the morning and held in the evening. And that is the short process for writing the speech. And this may be stressful, but the short process is also an advantage for the speech writer. It is like Benny mentioned, there can be so many comments, but when you only have one day to write the speech, then it's easier to keep focus, and there is less time for other people to have bright ideas. So I think that often a speech written in one day can be better than a speech written during a month. At its peak, almost 3 million people were watching the press briefings, and that's half the population because Denmark is a small country. And they not only watch the press conferences, and this is important, they also listened. And this is really a rare thing because most often people don't listen to a speech and they can't remember a thing from a speech. And this might be a very sad fact for us speech writers. But the press conferences during the pandemic were an exception from that. You might say that the coronavirus was a 100-year event in epidemic history, but it was also a 100-year event in speech writing. Because against the sad background, we had the chance for once in a lifetime to help writing speeches that were heard and remembered. And then why did people listen? Was it because we used beautiful words? No. Because they were brilliant speeches? No. There were three other reasons. First, the press conferences were in the evening, so you had a chance to watch afterward, and what else should you do? Everything was closed, no cinemas, no restaurants, you could just sit home and watch the press briefings. That's the first reason. And then second, everybody had this need for practical information. Can my children go to school on Monday? Do I have to wear a face mask in the bus? And we had all those questions and we needed the answers. So that was the other reason to listen. And then third, there was also this longing for community and for hope in this strange situation. So that was also why people listened. So this was a very unique scene for the speeches during the pandemic, that we did have a large and attentive audience.
Yeah, so that's one key learning. Circumstance is everything. And here comes another. The strongest rhetorical currency is credibility. So this is why it was crucial that the information that the Prime Minister gave was in fact correct. Being precise, but being precise on facts was quite difficult sometimes because, as Anita said, that we had a very short time to write these speeches. So, and also the facts often changed during the day. It was sometimes decided, perhaps the day before, that there was a room for a press conference the next day, and the messages and the speeches, everything had to be written and coordinated in just one day. Furthermore, everybody besides our small crisis group with the Prime Minister in front were sent home because of the lockdown. And this gave some serious difficulties because we were not used to work from a distance in the Prime Minister's office. And it led to some quite nerve-breaking situations. I will share one with you today. At one of these press conferences, it was so hectic at close to the press meeting that I had to sort in which part of the speech that was fact-checked. And this fact-checking thing is a key element in the Prime Minister's office. It has to be correct. But I had to sort because the time was running. There was, I don't know, 7 minutes left or so. So I didn't have the time to fact check everything. I had to prioritize. And when the speech was done, it was sent to the Prime Ministers, to the Prime Minister, who was just sitting just on the floor above. And I got hold, of course, of one of those colleagues that had to fact check a certain part of the speech. And of course, an important number was changed. So I stopped breathing. And I, of course, I had to call the Prime Minister's secretary and literally stop him, make him stop the Prime Minister from entering this press conference. And I, with my shaking hands, I pressed the right number. I changed the number in the speech, and I printed it out myself. And I ran upstairs, and the Prime Minister was standing just by the door, about to enter the press conference. Like this, and I just gave her the new speech and took the old one, and she looked at me and she said, "What's been changed?" And I said, "It's just a number." And she looked at me like, "Can I trust you?" but then she just smiled and exhaled quite loudly and went in. And then I started breathing again, and then, everything went well.
Yeah, it's after some crucial numbers. That was always the starting point of the speeches. We began with these prime numbers, very matter of fact, and then we ended the speech at a higher note. And in fact, I think this is always a good way to organize your speech, that you start low, and then you can end high. An example of such a beginning is just before Easter 2020, and I'll just read it to you. We are trying to translate it. It says, "Welcome to the press conference. We are closely following the development of the coronavirus in Denmark every day, every week. Today, 533 are hospitalized. Of those, 137 are in intensive care. Behind every number is a person and their relatives. It makes a deep impression on me, on you, on all of us. And of course, the biggest impression is made by the figures of how many have died with the coronavirus. We now have 77 deaths in Denmark. Every life lost is a tragedy." That was the Prime Minister's words. And remember the last sentence? Every life lost is a tragedy. Kasper will return to that one in a moment. But first I will mention another issue in the same speech. This is just before Easter. We had had 3 weeks of lockdown, and the Prime Minister wanted to give hope, but without risking responsible behavior. So this was a difficult message. If she says things are better, if she is more optimistic, will people then be less responsible? It was important to get it right. And a few hours before the press briefing, we sit at the Prime Minister's office, around the table, always 2 meters apart, and his hand sanitizer beside the coffee cups. And then the Prime Minister says, "I want to say it as it is. I want to say that I'm nervous to say what I will say today." So I rush down the stairs to my office. All other doors are locked, and I'm the only one at work. And right as she told me, and she said it like this. I read apart from her speech again. "Our joint efforts are absolutely crucial, and therefore I hardly dare to say what I'm about to say. But now I say it. If we, for the next 2 weeks during Easter, continue to stand together by keeping a distance," that was kind of a slogan we had. And if the numbers remain stable and reasonable for the next 2 weeks, then the government will begin an opening of our society on the other side of Easter. When I'm nervous to say this, it is because the worst thing that can happen after this press conference is that you or others think it's getting brighter, then we can be a bit more sloppy. No, we cannot. We must do the opposite." So that was the way she said it. And in this way, she made it a something for something. You might say it was a rhetorical pact with the audience. But I think the most important thing is that the Prime Minister just said things as they were, very matter of fact. And that could be a good guideline for all speech writing, that we go don't need all those fancy words or those complicated pictures and metaphors. Just use simple words and keep it simple and say just what you want to say.
Yeah. And now we get back to the phrase that Anita asked you to remember. Every life lost is a tragedy. In hindsight, the real tragedy was this sentence itself. Because it was, of course, written to reflect compassion, but it, in fact, created an uncertainty about the goal of the government. Even before the speech was had ended, Twitter started rumbling. Editors, liberal and conservative commentators started asking, is every COVID death really a tragedy? What about those who die from the flu? And if every death is a tragedy, should we shut down everything forever? So, unfortunately, this uncertainty hit the backbone of the pact that Anita just talked about. Because what was actually the goal? The opposition grabbed it, the newspapers caught on with it, and it turned into an ideological discussion. For the first time during this pandemic, during this crisis, we had a real discussion about what was actually the goal and could it be different from what the government said. Today it seems evident that we could have avoided this by, with a few words, reflecting what the Prime Minister might actually meant, which we could have written, every life lost is a tragedy to the family and friends who missed their loved ones. Instead, we ended up repeating this phrase in the next speeches as well. And in hindsight, this was not very wise. And it is an example of the precision needed in such key speeches.
Now, every good speech, they have sentences that we remember by. I would mention, and I am Curtin, as descended across the continent. Why do we remember this sentence? Of course, it's perfect and it's brilliant and frightening. Why do we also remember it? Because it was true and it is true, and it anticipated the situation in Europe for decades to come. And another example is the Gorbachev tear down that wall. Why do we remember this sentence? Of course, because the wall came down 2 years after the speech, so this speech also anticipated the future. So, of course, we will not compare our Prime Minister's press briefings to Churchill or Reagan's iconic speeches, but we can learn from the masters, and we can learn that often it is the situation more than the words that determines what will be remembered. In Denmark, we had not so much a sentence, but one word that ended up being kind of iconic in the spring of 2020. And that was the word samfundssind, which I will try to translate. It's something like community spirit. And the words dates back to the Second World War and was used by a former respected prime minister. We didn't actually know that when we wrote it in the speech, but also you write a speech, and I think you will recognize this, and you just write what you have to write, and you're not really thinking this will be remembered or this will be remembered, which sentence will stick. But some consent, community spirit, that was a word that did stick. And it became the word of the year in Denmark. And it was even mentioned in BBC, along with the Danish word hygge. Perhaps you know that,
yes.
And then if you should say, why did this one stick? There was nothing fancy about it, but in some way it captured what it was all about, that to get through the pandemic, we all had to contribute. But what also happened with the word was that we heard it again and again, and like we all got very tired of the pandemic, perhaps we all also got tired of this word, and we had to invent a new way of talking about the pandemic in the Prime Minister's speeches. But that's another story.
Yeah. And then, as Anita mentioned, what really worked was when the Prime Minister just said things as they were. But two paragraphs from the same speech held on March 11, the date of the big lockdown in Denmark back in 2020. shows that saying it as it is can work both ways. So now, I have a challenge for you. I will read two paragraphs from the very same speech. And then I want you to guess which one had a positive effect and which one certainly didn't. Okay, so I read paragraph number one. We are standing on foreign ground. We are in a situation not unlike anything we have experienced before. Are we going to make mistakes? Yes. Am I going to make mistakes? Yes. And I will need your patience. That was paragraph number one. Paragraph number two. We must minimize the activity in our society as much as possible, but without bringing Denmark to a standstill. So, we prioritize to make restrictions in the public sector in order for the private sector to continue as best as possible. All of us must, of course, be able to buy goods in the shops, and goods must be produced, transported, and sold. And let me emphasize, we are not in a food crisis. There is no need to hoard bread or toilet paper. Who think number one worked out? Who thinks number two worked out? Okay, here comes the answer. This picture is from the very same day, the very same evening. And in fact, it ended up by being massive queues around many shops in Denmark. It was not on the verge of panic, but almost. Of course, number one worked out, and the minister at many occasions referred to this. I told you I was going to make mistakes. I did. But this one we should have, of course, foreseen. If I told you not to think of sunshine, you probably are. So this was not very, very, very bright, and it was a specific lesson of the power of speeches.
Yeah, perhaps that was the one example that sometimes one day is too short to write a
piece. Yeah.
But then back to our first question, the title of our presentation, can you save a country with a speech? And we have to disappoint you and apologize for the clickbait headline, because our answer is, of course, no. But if anyone saved the country, it was like everyone, because the whole population, each person was keeping a distance and doing what they should do. And then, of course, the timeless healthcare staff. But a speech at the right moment in time can call for a certain behavior, and that is important. And it's not because it's a good speech, but because it seizes the moment. And the special thing during the pandemic was that many restrictions were not laws. They were calls for a certain behavior. And here, people can indeed play a role, speeches can play a role, making people listen and making people act. And this probably applies in other major crises to war, terrorist attacks, tsunami, and yeah, just remember Zelensky's speeches. And what also happens during major crises is that the political leader becomes extremely popular. And that is, of course, a good thing because it helps getting the message through. And the Prime Minister told us that one evening during the spring 2020, she had a walk, it must have been the summer, she had a walk through Copenhagen, and people spontaneously started applauding, clapping their hands when she and this is not a very dangerous thing to do, so it was extremely popular. But this is what happens during crisis, and it doesn't always stick for long. It will not help you win the next election. Just think of Churchill. But one learning from the pandemic sticks, and that is, in time of crisis, something as old-fashioned as a speech is the main communication tool for the Prime Minister, and this this not an interesting paradox? We couldn't meet, and a speech is an event where we meet, and then it got a revival in a time when we could not meet. I think we should close our presentation on this very uplifting message for our community as speech writers, and then we will have some time for discussion.